When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. Back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 123. Going to recap your week in Fab, as always, and answer your awesome listener questions. You can find myself on Twitter at BDEntric and the Bat Flip portion of the podcast on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby G, how we doing, man?
Wow, that was fun. Yeah. I'm good. It's been an interesting day. I had Snack Shack duties today for Little League Baseball, which was fun. I'm amazed at how like the Snack Shack, at least where I'm at now, does not resemble the Snack Shack of old, because the number of candy options and the amount of food that they have available is just staggering. Like we have Icy's,
really,
like Slurpees,
wow,
like in our Snack Shack, which is crazy. I made a bunch of
nuts
Slurpees for people. And and I just have to say, Bubba, I'm going to say some very controversial words, because I think within the fantasy baseball community, and I think baseball community in general, you know, there's a certain level of respect and I don't know what the right word is, like, I think, is veneration a word? Veneration?
It's out of my pay grade if it is.
Veneration. Let me just look it up, make sure I'm using the right veneration definition. Okay. Great respect or reverence. Okay. Yeah. Veneration.
Nailed it.
There's a great veneration for Little League Baseball. But I have to tell you, Bubba, having sat through an ungodly number of games already this year with still a month to go, small person Little League Baseball, my son is 8, yep, is the absolute 100% worst.
Is this their first year without Coach Pitch?
Oh, it's the first year without Coach Pitch. Unless they throw four balls. Then I mean, coach, literally, like, the game is like just, it's just challenging. I mean, you lose at least 2 to 3 kids for hit by pitches every single game. Like, there's tons of blood. There's like lost teeth.
There's blood and lost teeth. I love it. It's war out there.
It is. It's unbelievable.
It's a Thunderdome on the diamond.
And then, like, you just, you know, and then, like, there's just everything so wrong about it. Like, the kids are standing up there, and then the kids are throwing, and like, they're looping it up there, and the ball goes like over the kid's head, but lands in the catcher's glove, and it's a strike. We're trying to limit these kids' O swing, but I don't even know where the strike zone is. You know, they don't even have umpires behind the plate. They're behind the mound.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the kids in the field are just like sitting around, like waiting for hours for a ball to be hit, let alone like to come in their direction. Like literally the things I've seen, like I've seen my son dabbing on the field as if, instead of paying attention. I've seen him reading the scoreboard instead of doing it, throwing his glove up and down in the air, like mid pitch, playing with his gum. Like all these kids are just like, I just want something to do that's fun and entertaining in the midst of all of this baseball that's happening. I mean, it's,
I love it.
It's so boring and painful. It is unbelievable. I mean, it's the worst. Like if go ahead.
If I can give you any optimism, because yes, this is, you're at the tough stage. Cause when it was like T-ball or at least the coach pitched, like there was some consistency kind of a little bit. Now that the kids are trying, it just turns into like, yeah, chaos. 9 and 10 year olds gets better. And then obviously 11, 12 is really good. Cause like the Little League World Series stuff, town to town is different, obviously talent level. But I remember when you get to 9 and 10, and there's a reason why All-Stars, there's like a 9 and 10-year-old All-Star and 11 and 12. There's no 8-year-old All-Stars. There's not. So you're at the really difficult one. That good thing, the season's almost over. And your son likes to play baseball, it sounds like. So that's good, too.
That's the bad part, Bubba.
Oh, he doesn't even like to play? He
doesn't even really like to play baseball.
Then yeah, you need to go. You need to call
the
it
other,
a day.
The other day, he's like, he's like playing like in the dugout with his friends or like trying to have a good time or whatever. And the coaches are like, you know, don't pay attention or whatever. And he comes over to me and he goes, Dad, baseball's like school and the coaches are the teachers. And I was like, oh man, this is not. So anyways, he's not digging it, which kind of sucks, but, man, is it the most boring thing? And you can judge me as a parent and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's great to see my kid out there, da 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 da. But oh my goodness, it's rough out there.
So. It's funny you say that because it's a tough watch. Was it an hour and a half? Hour 15?
An hour and a half. Yeah, they play it for an hour and a half.
It gets better if he keeps playing. If not, hey, go find what you love to do. But if he keeps playing, it will at least get more entertaining for you. He might not enjoy it, but you'll have something to at least watch because they'll play at least 4 to 5 innings of quasi-competitive. Like sometimes the shortstop can actually field the ball and throw it. Like there's some things that start to happen. So you're close.
Totally. But
like I told you before the show, I got to, in college, myself and a roommate, we coached a 9 to 10 year old Little League team. And when the season started, it felt like Bad News Bears. Like we had like 2 good players and the rest was just like, oh no. But the kids had fun. They loved us. Like we made it fun for them. And by the end, we played pretty well. So it depends on how it goes, but it's different. And it's changed a lot since when we were kids to then when I coached, it changed a ton in that span. And then to what it is now with all the other sports, like soccer is so big now. Like I think that's another thing. Like when we played, baseball was the game. So it was more flooded with talent. Where now it's like, okay, kids, like soccer's doing Sunday things. You go play baseball on the weekday. Like it's stuff like that where I think you get some of that as well. So
yeah, I mean, basketball is a lot of fun for the kids.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, just running up and down. Yeah, that's my type of game for these little people.
I'll never forget. Sorry, we'll talk baseball here, but this is fun. I'll never forget, again, when I was in college, I refereed YMCA little kid basketball on Saturdays. Yeah, there were certain days where you just like, okay, travel, whatever you guys want, guys. Like, this is, it's not going to matter. Just like, just don't elbow each other in the face. Like, it's going to have fun.
Oh, man.
It's entertaining.
The double dribble is the best move in like,
oh, yeah.
Little kid.
Kind of dribble it over my head, pick it up, and do it again.
Just stop,
yep.
Dribble, stop, yep. Dribble, stop, dribble. Yeah.
100%. It's so entertaining. But all right. We're here to talk some fantasy baseball, but that's the fun part about this show. We like to go down to the wormholes and do some fun stuff. So, Little League Baseball, everybody. The fun is just beginning. Let's just put it that way. Wait till Toby might have 2 kids doing things at the same time. Then the fun really begins.
It'll never happen.
Okay. But let's talk FAB, because one thing we never thought we would see, and we're, again, for those that keep track at home, we're using the online championship on NFBC, so 12-team leagues. Week 5 FAB player movement. We're going to talk about the top X amount of players and the rates and how we kind of looked at these players. But the most added player this past week in 138 leagues for as high as 111, as low as one. The 111 is a bit startling, but added almost everywhere. Sheldon Noisy of the Oakland Athletics, who has been swinging it pretty well since the 18th, about 2 weeks, hitting .333. You know, only three extra base hits, but three stolen bases, playing every day, hitting second for the Oakland A's. He's going to have some multi-position eligibility potentially soon because he plays a lot of third, but sprinkles in second and first. I have my thoughts, but I liked how when Toby saw it earlier, he was like, Sheldon Noisy, really? So I want to hear Toby's thoughts first.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why people would have gone after him. I think, number one, the A's, they only have six games this week. I think they have
nine next week.
I think you were the one who tweeted that out, and I saw that. So I could see people trying to get ahead of the curve. I mean, let's just look at Sheldon Noisy. I mean, I think the thing is, this is like quintessential, just had the best week of my career, you know, and people are going out on the wire to grab him. So he's got a 7.6% walk rate, 26.6% K rate, you know, so he's striking out more than your typical batter. He's got a 310 average, which is buoyed by a 417 BABIP. He's got a 60% ground ball rate. That's right. 60% ground ball rate. He's like Framber Valdez, the equivalent as a pitcher, you know, 33.7 O swing, 73.5% contact. So below league average in both categories. 28% hard hit rate. He does have three barrels at 6%, max EV of 108. So, I mean, again, like, he's playing every day, so he's valuable in 15 teamers. It's just so ugly out there. He's got the second and the third base eligibility, so that's beneficial as well. But I just don't see it. I think he's a guy where, you know, if you're good, if you're putting in bids for him, you know, great. But like, it's just a situation where you probably just had the best week of his season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now you're going to be left with whatever else he does. Although he probably got hits off of Ryan Yarbrough today, because I started Ryan Yarbrough.
Who didn't?
In Portland League.
But
good question. Can we do a segment called Who didn't get a hit off of Ryan Yarbrough today?
In the dead ball era, who didn't score on? They got five runs off of Ryan Yarbrough.
How do you do that against the A's?
But I agree with pretty much everything you said. Like, I think he's a good player for like 15s. Where he'll have his moments for 12, like streamability. I don't think he's an all-the-time player, but I've been writing him up lately because I do like weekly recaps, like guys on the rise. And we look at his numbers, he's been on the rise. But you mentioned the BABIP is legit. Like, you got to pay attention to that. He's never been the best batting average guy in the minors, but what he has been in the minors was a power bat, especially during the juice ball era. But I think people are hoping that returns. We haven't seen that kind of quality of contact yet this year. But the fact he's playing every day, he's hitting second every day. The A's are horrible, but they're going to run him out there. And the biggest thing, as you mentioned, it is that nine games next week, I think people maybe try to get ahead of the curve a little bit. That's just my only guess. Could be wrong. I still understand $111, but I get the bid knowing playing time. There's lots of injuries popping up now. Like, roll with the hot, like, especially in 12s where you're doing a lot of the up and down streaming stuff, like where it's much different than a 15. Ride him while he's hot. If he goes, you know, two for 22 this week, drop him again or whatever. But after the nine game week, drop him. But you can do that more so in a 12 easily than a 15. So I can see the appeal with Noisy in that situation. But here's the guy I'm excited to talk about, because one Toby G was a big House on Kim fan in DC's and in the preseason draft time. He was all about Kim and his positional flexibility and all the goodies he's got going there. And when you look back at Kim, he's starting to really heat up over the last couple of weeks, and CJ Abrams is out of the way now. So it's Kim's role, and he's playing pretty much primarily shortstop, against from run to third base. So that flexibility will continue for Kim probably into the next year, and the production's there. So Toby, the floor is yours. This is one of the guys you were really high on in some leagues. I'm pretty sure you loved plugging him into your lineups.
I wish I had him in more leagues, Bubba. I actually drafted him in a couple of my bigger leagues, and I dropped him.
He was only playing
against lefties. Yep. It was painful. Don't listen to anything I say from now on. I mean, Ha-Seong Kim, though, I mean, I got him in an OC. I picked him up in an OC, $11 uncontested this weekend. I tried to get him. I had him available in one main, and I got beat out on him. But I mean, he's kind of the exact opposite of Noisy in a lot of ways, because he's better than league average across the board in a lot of different things. So 10.2% walk rate, 20.3% K rate. So both of those marks are better than league average. He's got a 270 BABIP, so nothing's kind of BABIP inflated. Very low ground ball rate at 27.5%. So he's hitting the ball in the air. He has a 28.2% O swing, so better than league average. Overall contact rate at 82.7%, well above league average. Again, so the underlying skills are supportive. The quality of contact hasn't been great, 27.5% Fangraphs, hard hit. He's hitting a lot of fly balls, a lot of infield fly balls. I expect that number will go down a little bit, you know, as we get a larger sample of batted balls. But, you know, he's got six barrels for a 15% barrel rate. You know, the max EV is at 108.5, but his max EV last year was 112.3. So we know he can hit it hard. He's been a little... So it's just he can kind of do everything. And then he's got the speed element to him as well. You know, he only has one steal right now, but if you look at his BatX projection for the rest of the season, you know, 353 plate appearances, 10 home runs, seven steals. You know, the one thing that kept me from having huge bids on him was, and maybe this is galaxy braining it a little bit too much, but it's just that Tatis Jr. is not too far away, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how far away he is, but when he comes back, will there still be that everyday spot in the lineup for him? It's just except against lefties, right? Like, we're talking everyday plate appearances. Yeah. But I just love, like, I mean, you literally, you have like a 2015 guy who can potentially do that, who is on the wire in a number of 15 teamers in addition to 12 teamers. So I like Hossein Kim a lot. You know, he's a guy who maybe this year he's kind of medium good, but like maybe next year he could be super good, still young, making those adjustments, seems to be improving. You know, we'll kind of see what happens.
Yeah, I like it. Like, I guess my biggest concern coming into the season was playing time. And now that that's good to go, I grabbed him where I could in most 12s. I didn't get him everywhere because people were higher on him than I was, but I definitely had bids in pretty much everywhere he was available in 12s. And I got a few, like when we recap later, we'll talk about which ones I got him because I can't remember anymore. But yeah, he's I'm very intrigued with the playing time. And like you said, the quality is there. He's hitting sixth the last couple days, which is really nice because that offense is not the best outside of Manny Machado right now. There's a lot of holes in that offense. So the beautiful thing in that regard is if he keeps hitting, he might move up even more. And that makes it even more intriguing. Like, sixth is cool. Sixth is really cool. But imagine if he gets like second in front of Machado. He can run and score some bags. Mm-hmm. Like, that'd be pretty sweet. So you never know. If he keeps producing, they're going to want to move him around because the Padres, I don't think they're ready to keep losing the way they've, you know, tried to build that team the last couple of years. So pretty interesting stuff there. All right. Ryan Helsley of the St. Louis Cardinals. He had a big weekend, big two inning save on Sunday, lighting the world on fire. Gallegos got the save on Monday, probably because Helsley, you know, had the two inning save, so it makes sense. But Helsley's been filthy. No runs allowed in his 8 1/3 innings so far, 16 strikeouts. Swinging strike rate 27%. My goodness. Like, he's been awesome. I didn't put any bids in for him that were close to winning him. So what's your thoughts on Ryan Helsley, Toby?
Yeah, I mean, he's been dominant. The most impressive stat I think that I have never seen before is a 0.12 whip.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I mean, all the numbers are out of this world. And maybe I should have been more aggressive. I mean, I had some bids on him the last like few weeks, you know, but nothing where I really prioritized him. Yeah, I mean, the numbers are insanely good. The question, I guess, is just whether he's going to be the get saves or not. In like a main event, I mean, if he continues to be this dominant, then sure, you can afford to have him in there. But it's just a little bit hard if he's not closing. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you have Ryan Helsley right now, you're convincing yourself that Ryan Helsley is the closer, right? Yep. If you have Giovanni Gallegos, you are convincing yourself that he is your closer, right? So we're all just trying to convince ourselves of whatever is in our best interest. And I mean, I don't know. I have Gallegos in one DC, so I feel like I'm a fairly neutral party, but it seems like Gallegos has had every opportunity. I think he's only blown the one, and there was kind of that controversial error in that particular instance. And I think I heard from somebody somewhere that Marmol, the manager, even said, you know, are there some instances where I'll use Helsley as the closer? Sure. Is there some instances where I'll use Gallegos as the closer? Sure. If you were to ask me if Gallegos is my closer, would I say yes? I would say yes. So I think it's like a somewhat fluid situation, but I don't, outside of the one save that Helsley's gotten, I don't know why Gallegos wouldn't be the closer, especially if you're like arguing that Helsley's better, you know, like wouldn't that be Helsley in the higher leverage situations? I don't know. It just strikes me as like, I saw some really big bids and people are smarter than me. I mean, some people were in a, I mean, it's just this challenging thing, right? Where Johan Duryan, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gets one save. Yep. And so everybody's like, oh, it's, he's the best. He's the best ever. Now he's going to get every save moving forward. And it's like, he could, but what this year is telling us is that he's probably not, right? And none of these guys. And so the same conundrum continues where, do I have Helsley in this week? Do I have Duran in this week? Am I going to get any saves? Am I not going to get any saves? If I'm not going to get any saves, do I still want the, you know, 3 to 4 innings? What if he drops down to a reasonable strikeout rate where he's only striking out, you know, 12 per nine? So then he's getting you either 4 strikeouts in 3 innings or 5 and 4 or 6 and 4. And that's pretty good. But then you're not really getting the wins. And is the whip going to stay as good as it is? Like, we always assume that the skills are going to continue in perpetuity, but Major League Baseball has shown that that's very challenging to do that. So it's just a long-winded way of saying Helsley's clearly very dominant right now. I'd love to have him on my team, but it's still a challenging decision about whether to have him in or there or not.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. That's why, like, again, maybe I should have been more aggressive. We'll see. He's filthy, absolutely filthy. But I still think it's a Gallegos like 60-40, 65-35. Like, Helsley will get his, but I think they want him in high leverage. That's just simple. So maybe it'll sometimes be the 2 winning saves. Maybe it won't be. I think it's still mainly Gallegos' deal, like you said, until Gallegos really proves he can't do it. Maybe that happens. We saw it last year in St. Louis. All of a sudden, changing the guard, and you know, Gallegos took over and ran with it. Maybe he reverts back and he can't do it, and Helsley gets it. I missed out. It is what it is. But you also hit on the other big thing. It's like, there's going to be weeks where he gets no saves. There may be multiple weeks in a row where he gets no saves. You can keep running him out there while you leave a legit closer that might have worse ratios and strikeouts on your bench that might rack up 3 saves over 2 weeks. Like, that's a big, big thing you got to worry about. And it makes it tricky. Makes it like, would you rather play Helsley every week or Soto for Detroit every week? Like, Soto's ratios are garbage. He's like, he's struggling, but he's getting saves. At least he is for now. That could change still, but like, he is for now. Fulmer's right there. There's things happening, but that's kind of the conundrum. Do you take the Soto messy withness with the saves, or do you just want Helsley and the goodness? Like, it's tricky.
Yeah, I mean, Soto's got a 129 ERA and a 129 whip, yep. But he's only got 3 saves, so he's only got 2 more.
Because the Tigers.
Yeah.
The
Tigers. I mean, yeah, God.
Let's say
Soto looks under the hood. Holy cow. He looks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. His blow up is coming.
He looks really, really bad.
His blow up is coming.
Holy cow. Pick up Michael Fulmer, people.
Yep. Yeah. It's ugly for Soto. And I have a lot of Soto because you get him for cheap in drafts. But I'm also really, I haven't started him every week in certain leagues where I didn't need to. And it's one of those, like, if he gets gone, it's going to be a quick drop. It's not going to be a question with Soto, but just like guys like that you know are on like murky teams, do you want to do that dance? And that's where things go.
Saves
are so much fun, aren't they? The next one's fun. We go back to San Diego with another bat. This guy named Eric Hosmer picked up in 121 leagues as high as 201 for Eric Hosmer. Someone must have slipped on the key buttons, I don't know, but he is hitting 382. It's great. 3 home runs, only striking out 14% of the time. That's great. He's also got a 60% ground ball rate, which is what Eric Hosmer does. So awesome. But I think you can agree with me on this, Toby. If that ground ball rate stays the way it is, like he usually does, it's going to be tough to maintain this productivity for an entire season. That's just my 2 cents.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a 426 BABIP. He's got a 10.6% walk rate, but he's got a 36.5% O-swing, worse than his career average. He is making more contact than usual. Hasn't been great contact, lowest hard hit rate ever. so far, at least since his rookie season, on Fangraphs hard hit rate, which isn't the end all be all. He does have four barrels, 6.3%, right around his career average. So he's got four barrels and he's got the three home runs. Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of the same guy that he was before, except he's playing, I think he's playing every day at this juncture right now. But once he slows down a little bit, I don't know if that should continue. I mean, yeah, like you said, it's all just elevated stuff. Like,
yeah,
60% ground ball rate. He's got a 23.1% home run per fly ball, which is why it's looking so good. His career is 15.5%. I'm not sure why he'd get higher than that. Although he has in different periods of time in his career, but especially with the ball the way it is, and then a lefty in San Diego, it doesn't really seem like a great situation. But the batting average will be decent. He's never had a bad batting average, and especially right now, that's valuable.
Yeah, it for now, I get it. It's like the Sheldon Noisy argument. If you want to roll with it while he's hot, knock yourself out. Not going to be great in the power department, but he's playing every day, going to hit for an average, which today's baseball, it's hard to find guys to hit for average, so there's probably some actual viability to running him out there while he's hot, but that's got to come to an end eventually because we've seen it. It's like the baseball HQ thing. Once we see like an established trade, it's established type deal. We know who Eric Hosmer is in the end of the – he's played long enough where you can almost back of the baseball card him. Can't do that, like, good, but he's one of those guys. He's played enough where – if he hits 350 this year, I will be, I'm not going to say what I would do because I don't want to have to do that just in case, but it'd be pretty crazy. Let's put it that way. But next up on the list here, we don't need any more Eric Hosmer talk on this show. Unless Tammy Reed would like us to, we could talk about him all day long. But my dog, who I added everywhere last week, you slackers, and that he went for much more this week. So I guess in hindsight, I could have got him cheaper last week, but I got him cheaper last week than I would have this week. Let's put it that way. Bruce Zimmerman added in 111 leagues for as high as 121. Someone got him for a buck, though, so good for you. Two starts this week. First one was tonight against Minnesota. Five innings.
He did pretty well.
Yeah, 5 innings, 2 earns, 2 walks, 4 Ks. The Ks were early. He struggled a little bit. He had a couple hits batters, too. That's what I was kind of watching.
Those hit batters.
Because I love me some Zim. But on the season, he's playing great. 4 earned runs, 1.48 ERA, 3.32 xFIP. Strikeouts have been much better overall as a season. Some guys are still really skeptical about his overall skill set, but for now he's getting the job done, and there's something that ballpark is playing pitcher friendly. So there is a lot to potentially be said about that. But I love Bruce Zimmerman. I talked about him a lot last week. So what do you got on Brucey?
Yep, I like him a lot. I mean, I had Bruce Zimmerman. I have him in all but one of my DCs, I think. That's the good news. The bad news is I didn't start him in any of his first three starts of the season, because they were against the Yankees and the Blue Jays. So I benefited nothing from his great start, even though I have widespread exposure. I mean, everything looks pretty good for Bruce. I mean, the O swing is high, 34.4%. I didn't see how he did today. You know, not surprisingly, he struggles in the zone. You know, with contact, just because he doesn't have he's got a light fastball, to say the least. Swinging strike rate, 12.3%, K minus walk, 18.7, all very good. Not a ton of luck, 308 BABIP, 74.1% strand rate. So it all looks legit from there. I think it's just a matter of consistency. And again, like this profile where kind of soft throwing, but one of the reasons why I liked him, I mean, even when you look back at last year, I think he had, let's see, this is last year, he had 3 pitches with a 14% swinging strike rate or higher. So the fastball is ew, but then he's got the changeup at 14%, slider at 15.8%, curveball at 15.6%. Fast forward to this year, fastball is still ugly, but the changeup's up to 18.1%, slider's at 28.6%. The curve hasn't been great at 7%, but I mean, both that changeup and that slider are both wicked good pitches. And similarly, like that slider is going to work well against lefties. That changeup is going to work better against righties. Theoretically, I haven't investigated whether that's the case. So that's important, I think, for that reason. And then, yeah, the curveball is generating an 80% ground ball rate. So even when he falls behind in the count, he can go to that curveball, maybe generate some ground balls. So I like it a lot. You're not going to get a ton of wins probably because he's on the Orioles. I do think that there's a good chance that there's some blowups throughout the course of the year, just some especially really bad outings.
Yeah, it's just yeah. pretty tough.
But I mean, he seems like a great add in a 15 teamer. I think the challenge with the 12 teamer is I'm not sure there's a huge difference between Zimmerman and streaming guys with good matchups, you know, over the course of a week.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, pitching is, it's weird because pitching is, it feels like it's really thin. You know, it feels like the waiver wire is bare. It also feels like the waiver wire is bare for hitters. Like it just feels very, very naked.
Yeah. The last couple of weeks have been weird on Fab, like going through going, I really don't want to add anybody here. It's like, it's not great. But I'm like, I have to, like I'm holding, you know, so-and-so is out for 60 days. Like I got to do something here. It's garbage. So yeah, I feel you. Like the one thing I agree on the 12s with Zimmerman, it's going to be tough to like hold them. I'm going to try to hold them for as long as I can, but it's going to be tough because there will be two start guys that'll they'll fill in much more. I would just say with him, I'd try to be like a week or two early on the good matchups again because he will be expensive every time he's available. So try to like add him back cheap if you can. I know it's not going to be easy, but he'd be a roster spot I'd be willing to juggle if I could pull it off. But we'll see. Probably not the only one that likes him in each league. So makes it a little difficult. All right, next up on the agenda, this is a fun one. Talked about him on Thursday night with Ryan also. Chris Paddock. Yep. Good old Chris Paddock, the Cowboy. Added in 88 leagues, $142 max. Chris Paddock, he's made four starts, at least five innings and three straight. He has been very good. Only 16K, so the strikeouts aren't there, but he's only got two walks on the season. Has not allowed a home run. 3.15 ERA, 3.16 XFIP. And the most important thing, folks, he has a third pitch he's using almost 20% of the time. And it's been effective. The curveball's been effective.
What?
Yeah, yeah. And hey, to be fair, when I've knocked him for years on this show, it's because I said he needed a third pitch. Well, it's not like how Glass now developed a third pitch, which was filthy. But the curveball for Paddock at near 20% usage rate, it's filthy enough to make everything else work. And that's all he's ever needed. That's what we've always said about these guys. Now, can it be sustainable? We'll see. But that, to me, I'm not a pitching expert, but that's been the key to his success so far that's allowed him to get through five innings most starts. Were you interested in Chris Paddock?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't really available. I think he was gone in all my leagues. But, yeah, I mean, it looks pretty good. Like, I think the real key that you mentioned there is the really low walk rate. That's so important for him. Mm-hmm. He's always had that really low walk rate, but the Ks just aren't there. You know, the swinging strike rate really isn't there. The end zone contact isn't really there. So keeping that O swing up, you know, pounding the zone, getting ahead of guys, I mean, it is really critical for him. And he seems to be doing that, you know, 323 BABIP and 69.6% strand rate. So it's not like he hasn't been like he's been getting lucky in that department. I mean, he hasn't given up a home run yet, you know, and that's one thing. But even when you look at that, like barrel rate is at 3.2%. Again, it's going to take longer for, you know, these pitchers, you know, for that to be meaningful at all. I don't even know if it's meaningful, honestly, but, you know, that's the lowest he's had in a while. And so that's all really encouraging stuff. You mentioned the third pitch. I have not investigated it yet, but that could be a really
It's not elite, but it's good enough to like make it interesting.
Yeah. The curveball.
Yeah. He's throwing it nearly, he's basically throwing it almost one to one with his changeup.
I wonder why he's doing that. Well, so it's similar to kind of Zimmerman in a little bit.
Yep.
It's
100%. It's how Bundy, too. Look at Bundy. Bundy's doing the same thing.
Mm.
But that's why.
71.4% ground ball rate on it. So it's a hit me pitch, but. Yep. You're going to hit it, but it's not going to do much.
Like, look at his batting average against it, but his XBA. Like, in theory, they're almost getting lucky on his curveball right now.
Mm.
The XWOB was only 306. Like, they're overperforming on his curveball right now, according to the metrics. Again, it's early. Like, is there enough data to make it count? Probably not. But, like, it's not a put-away pitch, but it's got a better whiff rate than his fastball. So, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's very interesting. similar kind of profiles. I mean, honestly, Zimmerman's is better from a skills perspective, but I mean, just in terms of situation that he's in, I mean, Paddock's is good. So sure, roll with it. I'm not going to tell you he's not going to give up, you know, three home runs in his next outing.
He'll get blown up a few times this year. There's no questioning that. It will happen. But it's like you said with Zim, and I just pulled up Bundy just for fun, just to kind of spitball this with you here for a second. He's doing something similar. He's like, he's got his four seam, but then he's got like a 21% slider, almost 19% changeup now, and like his sinker 13, curveball 10. So it's like he's mixing up the pitches more. Like if you look at his rolling graphs throughout his last couple of years, he's using the changeup a lot more and kind of ditching the sinker more. And that just that little switch has helped this year. But we even said it last week, like he's going to get blown up because if it's not effective, it's going to get hit. And he got hit around a bit, but he still went six and struck out seven.
I almost like him more after getting hit around than I did previously because the numbers, the underlying metrics were better than they had been previously. Because
he went six. His strike rate is up for 12.2. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really, let me just see something too.
It's just fun seeing these guys. And the reason I wanted to connect it is A, Bundy's pitch mix change, but Bundy and Paddock are on the same team. So the Twins are doing something there with these guys. And it's not like we don't talk about that enough. And maybe it's just fool's gold early on in the season with the baseballs and stuff. But we always focus on like the Astros and these other teams. Maybe the Twins are starting to figure something out. They get these guys that people don't want anymore and they can just work on the skill set and they're good enough to get to their loaded bullpen. So is that fantasy relevant? I don't know. Cause they're only, if they're going five or six, that kind of makes it tricky at times, but maybe streamable on certain weeks. So just wanted to bring that up.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. Like with Bundy too, like he's got the 70.6% ground ball rate on his splitter, which has a 13.6% swinging strike rate. And then on the sinker, he's only thrown 32. So not a ton, but 55.6% ground ball rate. So, you know, at least like the 55.6% isn't elite, but you know, guys who maybe have somewhat limited repertoires only have two pitches that are really good or good, or maybe even just one, honestly, because the fastball is not good. But then having a pitch that they don't mind it if people hit it because they're not necessarily doing damage, at least yet. We'll see what happens when things, the environment changes a little bit.
And the other reason we talked about Bundy last week, and we didn't talk about Paddock, but somehow he came up in a conversation. Maybe it's when we were talking about Bundy. But Ryan made a bloom board that going into the weekend, so before the blow up in Tampa, he is one of the guys with he's basically had a strikeout rate over 11%, ball rate over like 20-something%, and a ground ball rate. He had a 11% swinging strike rate, a 28% ball rate, and a 47% ground ball rate. So he's throwing it in the zone, getting ground balls, just like the thing we looked at. So it makes for an interesting profile. Is it sustainable? We'll see. But throwing strikes is fun. Who would have thought? All right, Joey Wendell, 85 leagues, as high as 107, as low as $1. I like Joey Wendell. I get Joey Wendell. I didn't put any bids in on Joey Wendell. Tell me what I'm missing here. He hits the bottom of the order. He's been okay, don't get me wrong, but there's not a lot of power. He stole a couple bases over the last week. Before that, really hadn't stole a lot. Like in deeper leagues, sure, but we're doing 12 team right now, and I'm confused, Toby. Did I miss something here besides maybe a bunch of righties he's facing this week?
No, I think a lot of it is just the response. Like he had a good week with steals, I think.
Yeah,
hit three steals. And batting average. So I think people are kind of chasing after that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really special going on here. Again, and that's not to say he isn't a valuable player, but, you know, 60% ground ball rate. You know, he's not going to hit many home runs at all. You know, so if you... like you combine his projection, like his rest of season projection for the bat X is 246 with 5 home runs and 13 steals. And it's like, that would give him 6 home runs and 17 steals with like a 260 batting average over the course of a full season, something like that. And it just, you know, it's just hard because he doesn't do much. And I don't know how much he's going to help you. Anywhere really, but who knows? I mean, he can go on some streaks. He's with Miami. They steal a decent amount. So who knows? Who knows what Joey Wendell is going to do? Mr. Wendell. Mr. Wendell.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause like, yeah, he's got his moments, but like he had the 3 steals last week. Would you rather roll the dice in a 12 team league? 15 might be a little different because Wendell's probably got a pretty decent floor, you could say. But in a 12-team league, would you rather have Joey Wendell or Sheldon Noisy?
In a 12-teamer?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Noisy's hitting second, playing every day. Wendell still kind of platoons, hits bottom of the order.
I'd probably go with Noisy just because I think there's a little bit more power there. And so he's stealing, and I don't know how much he's going to steal overall, but...
Yeah, that was kind of a new thing it felt like for him. That was a surprise.
it's just hard, even with this home run environment, it's just hard to have a guy who in 600 plate appearances hit 6 home runs, you know? Yeah. Like, that's just a hard thing to have on your team. Like, unless Joey Wendell's like Miles Straw, but even then it's hard.
It's hard, but like, at least Joey Wendell's like a good baseball player. He's just not a fantasy baseball player. Like, it's just one of those things you got to accept in this game. All right, Dakota Hudson, 2 steps this week, 74 leagues, highest 118. Pretty much a 2-step add is the way I see it. 6 innings, 3 earned, 4 Ks tonight in step 1 against the Royals. Bobby Witt went deep for the first time. He had a good game. He's been swinging it. That's like an 11 or 12 game hitting streak since they moved him to 7th in the order. He's hit every game since they moved him down. Shocker. Take the pressure off the kid. He starts to rake. Like, it's amazing what the talent does. But that's not who we're talking about. Dakota Hudson. I didn't really care to add Dakota Hudson. Were you in on Dakota Hudson?
I was not. I mean, yeah. Hudson is – he's a little bit scary. Like, and I mean, you saw what happened here. So this is, he's got a 22.4% O swing. That's god awful. His Z contact is 89.6%. So way worse than league average. His overall contact is way worse than league average as well. He doesn't throw the ball in the zone that much. Doesn't really get in front of hitters so far. His swinging strike rate is 8%, which is awful. His K minus walk rate is 6.5%. His walk rate is 11.7%. His K rate, 18.2%. His BABIP, 180. His strand rate, 78.1. So you could argue theoretically that he's like, not only have the skills been awful, but he's due significant regression, which, I mean, he got a little bit of that today. It wasn't awful. He does generate a lot of ground balls, though, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. He's at 53.8%. So I'd prefer to see him at that 60% mark that he's hit a couple. Well, actually, those are just the smaller times. So even like that mid-50s percent. I like him being there a lot more. But there's just not a lot that he's given you. Not a lot of strikeouts. Maybe the ratios. You know, maybe you start him at home or something like that in some matchups. But it just has blow up written all over it, where there's no skill or anything of his, except for maybe the Cardinals defense that's above average.
Yeah. That's, I wanted nothing to do with him. Like, one thing for me is, if I'm streaming guys, yeah, the matchups have to be good, and he had okay matchups, but I got to have strikeout upside, and he just doesn't do it for me. Because if we're streaming them, we've talked about it in years past, they're obviously not aces, or they'd be on your team already. So there's going to be warts when you grab these guys. Like with him, he doesn't strike guys out. You know, you're hoping for the ground ball, so on and so forth. I want that strikeout upside, so at least if he's going to give it 3 or 4 runs, he's going to give me like 6 Ks. Like, give me something, and Dakota Hudson ain't going to do it. So, yeah, I was not interested in him. Santiago Espinal is pretty interesting, especially more in the 15s, and he was a big name in DC drafts early in the season. People loved him because he looked to be the starting third baseman for the Jays, and he's getting a ton of love for the Jays so far this year. Over the last 12 games, he's hit safely a 9 of 12 games, hit around 300, a couple home runs, a stolen base. Playing second base nearly every day because, you know, they went and got Matty Chapman. So that's been nice. But he's playing really well. And I guess while – and that's second base, third base eligible, I believe, now that he does that. I think he's more of a 15 guy for me than a 12. But I guess ride him while he's hot type situation. What's your thoughts on Espinal?
Yeah, I like Espinal, especially for 15-teamers. I mean, 12-teamers, a lot of these guys are just kind of interchangeable, honestly, depending on what the matchup is. But, yeah, I mean, Espinal, so 2 home runs, 3 steals, you know, 7 runs, 11 RBI, 250 batting average. So all, like, pretty nice, like you mentioned. The BABIP's not outrageous. It's actually below what he's been at in his brief career. He's hitting the ball in the air, 33.3% ground ball rate. He's hitting the ball harder than he's hit it before. Plate discipline is fine, 32.5%, not bad. He's making a lot of contact, 80.8% overall contact. I know people have referenced how he worked on gaining muscle in the offseason. So he's got 5 barrels, 8.3% barrel rate. So again, you know, nice there, especially for a guy who's got a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop in a good lineup. He's even gotten unlucky. His hard hit rate from Statcast perspective is high, 43.3, highest he's ever had. So he's definitely improving. He's good. You know, he's not going to be a monster power guy. I mean, his max exit velo is pretty close to Kevin Biggio levels at 106.9, slightly higher. So not that bad, but that's also up to almost 3 miles per hour from his previous high. So I think a lot of good things going on with Espinal. He's good. Kudos to a friend of the podcast, Rob DiPietro, who was a fan of Espinal
big time
in the off season. I think has a lot of him in DCs. So yeah, I like him. I mean, of all the guys we've talked about, honestly, of the hitters that we've talked about, I think it's probably like Ha-Seung Kim. I mean, Hosmer's fine too, but him and Espinal are kind of the guys that stick out to me as maybe, you know, guys that can give you a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed, not hurt your batting average, even help it. And I think that's worth a lot.
And Espinal's on a great offense. Like, sure, the Jays aren't clicking as often as we thought, but that's just baseball right now when they're still doing pretty good considering the rest of baseball. And so that's going to be a plus as well, because he's going to have games where he gets extra RBIs because there's so many guys on base, because he gets drove in. A lot of things can be huge for Espinal. So I'm with you there. He does have a lot of upside. He just, I guess I didn't think of him as deep in a 12, but I guess because teams are so loaded in 12s, it's just tough to make that move. But yeah, I can see it for sure.
12s are so much just like stream the guy who's got the good matchups in the 7 games.
That's
like, these guys are the same.
I've dropped so many guys on 12s already that I've never considered dropping in a 15 just because I'm like, screw it. I'm going to grab this guy while he's hot and go here and here and here and here and just kind of play that game, because that's what you do. And just pray you don't overspend too much. That's just the way I looked at it. Last guy I want to talk about here, unless you have some more, but we'll hit some listener questions in a minute. But I wanted to bring up JP Crawford. Added in 66 leagues, as high as 530, wow, over half of someone's beginning of the season budget.
Who are these people? I want to know who they are.
I know. There needs to be a name attached, because I get JP's been great. He had an 11-game hitting streak coming into the night. He snapped it, went 0-for-4. But on those 11 games, he was hitting 429 with 4 home runs, striking out 17% of the time. He was hitting great, don't get me wrong. You know, even, you know, 12% barrel rate, 47% hard rate rates, not bad, not great, not bad. But let's be real. Like, we've seen JP Crawford. He might be better than usual, sure. Like, he's hitting fifth for the Mariners. Usually he's at the top of the order. But I didn't want to break the bank for JP Crawford. What's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's definitely reasonable in 15 teamers. I mean, 12 teamers, not that much. I mean, the thing is, I think the last time we met, the last time we potted, I think we talked about him and his walk rate was at like 18%. And his K rate was at like some ridiculously low number. And now it's at 12.5% and 10.4%. I mean, again, the K percent at 10.4% doesn't make any sense. His contact rate is lower than it's been the last 3 years. It's a pure small sample fiction is what's happening there. Again, the O swing, the walk rate is so high, but the O swing is right. It's higher than his career average. And so again, the walk rate is always going to be decent because he's got a great eye, but it's going to go down. The K rate is going to go up, you know, probably close to that 16%. His BABIP's going to go down from 388. 100% of his barrels aren't going to turn into home runs. I think the thing that you're hoping for from him, though, is that that ground ball rate stays lower at 40.8%. But I know it's up over the last little bit, too. So like that at 40.8%, I mean, that's going to translate into more home runs. So instead of hitting the 9, then he probably hits, you know, 13, 12, something like that.
Which does make a bit of a difference.
Oh, for sure. But then the challenge is he's not really stealing for you.
Yep. Yep. Ask right? Chaz Chisholm about then, that. Chaz is krilling me. I was kidding.
Yeah. I mean, and then like batting average wise, do we think that he's going to hit higher than the 273, which is his highest of his career, which reflected the highest BABIP of his career? You know, we shouldn't expect that, especially with a lower ground ball rate. Like, unless, you know, he's got that line drive rate at 28.2%, and he could become an elite line drive guy. You know, you could maybe see that in his skill set because he's a contact first type of profile, but I don't see enough of it. So again, like, if you picked him up last week, kudos, because he's continuing to rake. I'm just not sure that I continue to see it. And then I don't really understand some of the projections, like, you know, the bat has him for 7 more steals this year. So for 8, you know, like, I guess maybe it's just 3 all of last year. He had 11 in over 600 plate appearances in the 2 previous seasons combined. Doesn't seem like he's going to start stealing more than he has previously. So I'm a little skeptical of that as well. I mean, but that only gets him to 8 steals in 650 plate appearances. So again, it's just one of these things where a guy doesn't really have a skill that you can latch on to and yep. do anything with. So
just for fun, I think I know the answer, but I'm just curious. Would you rather have JP Crawford or Santiago Espinal?
I think I'd rather have Espinal.
That's I don't know if you go there. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with it at all. Because JP, like, he's crushing and he's continuing to hit right now, but that regression train is going to hit with like a hammer from Thor. It is going to hurt to bring him back to that 270-ish range. And that's going to be a sting, because that's what we keep talking about when we do these recaps. Like, sure, you can buy the streaks, like ride them when they're hot, but just realize like these dudes are going to fall back to earth and it's going to really, really stink. Like, it's going to stink. And by the way, I just saw a bad baseball cost Muncy a 2-run homer against Rodon. He crushed that baseball. So that made me feel good. Oh, but man. All the way to the wall and right. But yeah, so it's one of those deals with regression. So if you're paying for these guys, great. But paying 530, not so much. All right, let's do some listener questions on this bad boy here. And this is the fun one. Larry Cardosa asks, what's up? Which call-up has a better chance to stay up? MJ Melendez, Jose Miranda, or Juan Yepes? I want to get your thought, and then I have a guest prospect analyst that gave me an answer.
Oh, wow. Say it one more time. Who are the two?
What call-up has a better chance to stay up? MJ Melendez, Jose Miranda, or Juan Yepes? Oh, man. Two Royals, one Twin.
I mean... You know, you guys know I don't know these things. I would look at
somebody.
I'm glad you did, because we are listeners. We're not massive,
broadcast or prospect people, so I want to make sure at least I had.
Yeah, so in. Like the Bad X has Melendez essentially at 18-6 in 600 plate appearances with a .216 batting average. Miranda, I mean, I'm guessing that Miranda is probably going to be my answer. But let's see, Jose Miranda, he's at .255 with 5 home runs and 1 steal in 237 plate appearances. So like, I don't know, 12 home runs and a .255 batting average. And then the last one was Juan Yepes. Actually, I'm probably going to go with Yepes. Although like, I don't know contextually, like why he's been called up. Why has he been called up, or has he been called up?
I believe he played tonight. Could be wrong. I know Melendez made his debut tonight.
I would probably go with none of them. Yeah. But I would probably go with maybe Miranda.
Miranda, well, you win the lotto, because our guest prospect analyst, Eric Cross at EricCross04 from Fantrax.com and the Fantrax Tool Shed podcast, Fantasy Pros as well. They win it all. Awesome dude. Does a lot of prospect work. There's a lot of great prospect people out there, but I texted Eric the second I got that. I said, hey, can you give me a quick answer? I'd really appreciate it. And his answer was Miranda. He's the best pure hitter of the three, and he can play first base, second base, and third base, which would help him stay on the field. So he thinks the fact that basically they called it Miranda means they want to use Miranda now. That's kind of their thought process. Like, Melendez came up because they sent Cam Gallagher down, the backup catcher. So Melendez will get some run, but it's like, it's for how long? Like, Carlos Santana got scratched tonight, so maybe that helps a little bit. Their best hitter isn't even in the bigs right now, at least best AAA hitter coming into the year. So we'll have to kind of see what the Royals are doing. They got a lot of guys down there that are going to have some fun this year, but right now it's very, very questionable. All right, next on the docket here, we have Eric Samolsky asks, would love to hear you two just discuss Drew Rasmussen. Can't figure him out. Relying on the changeup and slider is good, but the cutter also gets hit hard. He looked great against Seattle, but fairly average against Oakland. He confuses me. I think your buddy, the robot, was high on Drew Rasmussen.
Yeah, Phil is very high on Drew Rasmussen. I'm not going to lie, I don't fully understand Drew Rasmussen either. I mean, Phil's a lot smarter than I am, so I would trust his judgment on him, and I'd obviously hold on to him. I don't think anybody's getting rid of him. But like, I just don't get how he's doing it. I mean, he's got I mean, the swinging strike rate is elevated this year at 12.7%, and the K minus walk rate is 17.6%, which is good. The O swing's good at 33.3. You know, not dominant in the zone, 87.1 in zone. You know, but he's limiting the home runs. Like, he's right in line with his home runs. He doesn't walk guys, you know, which I think is super helpful. He has a 210 BABIP, which is due some regression, but he's also, you know, his career is at 260, although it's very small. So we really don't know where that's going to even out at. So he doesn't necessarily have the skills of like an elite guy, but he's in a really good context. He's throwing five innings or more now. He's got a great bullpen behind him. The projections don't mind him at all. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to explain sometimes what makes people good. I mean, Michael Wacha is good so far, and there's no explanation for it. There's a lot more of an explanation for Rasmussen. And I'll be totally wrong on him because I was not interested in him at all.
It's fun seeing that his cutter, his four seam, and his slider, he's thrown all about 31% of the time. And the one thing I'll say is last year, Savant doesn't even have him throwing a cutter. So the cutter's a new pitch, it looks like. And that could be a big piece of it. It's got a .095 batting average. Like, there's probably some negative regression coming. Massive whiff rate, putting guys away with it. Just looking at the stats here. So the cutter could be a huge addition to things. Because last year he was 65% forcing, 30% slider. Now he's 31.5 slider, 31, almost 32 cutter, 33 forcing. So he dropped the forcing almost. Basically, his entire forcing drop is now cutter. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, the cutter is huge. I'm just looking at what you were talking about now, and that gives him now almost two pitches now that are 15% swinging strike. And to your point, like, he's throwing them all about a third of the time. So it's really hard. You think you're getting the fastball, it ends up being the cutter. You think you're getting the slider, it's the cutter. You think you're getting that's the cutter, it's your slider. You know, then you're – so it's a really nice – kind of combination repertoire that he's got right there. And adding that pitch is huge. I can see. Yeah, it's big.
And the one thing though, to Eric's thing, and I think that I love the addition, plus, like you said, the 33, basically third of the time, you don't know which pitch is coming. So I think that's huge. But he did mention it's confusing because the cutter's doing so well, but it gets hard. It has almost a 59% hard hit rate. Like, yeah, when it gets hit, it gets smoked.
I wouldn't pay attention to that stuff though.
That's fair. Small, such a small,
very sample. Small. Yeah. I mean, how many balls have been put in play that he?
Yeah,
how many of his cutters?
Pitches, I don't even know how many balls in play.
I would not pay attention to his pitch specific stuff, especially if the pitch is good. Is a good pitch, and it's not like the best pitch, but it's a good enough pitch. You know,
it's a good point. So. I think the cutter's huge. That's the thing. And I'd like to, Eric, one thing I'd say, because Eric's a genius. He's He won two FSWA awards this last year for writing. Really great content he puts out. And I know he's smart enough to do this. If I was Eric, I'd keep an eye on this and look back like at the All-Star break with a bigger sample to see how the cutter's doing. And then like an end of the year, and you might get a really good idea for next season with Drew Rasmussen. That's my two cents. And it won't help you now, obviously, but I think we might get a better idea of, like, we're speculating the cutter is such the massive reason why the hard hit is what I'm trying to see should stabilize by then, I would say, but we'll see. Cause if it's like a Mariano type cutter, that's disgusting to add at 30% of the time. So we'll see. He had one more question that I'm going to throw in here. Cause you kind of mentioned him. Also, if you wouldn't mind addressing what in the hell is Wacha doing? And I'm bitter because I drafted Wacha in round 30 of all my late drafts for his start the season. And then I've dropped him everywhere, and he's still pitching really good with his smoke and mirrors, and it's making me angry. So what do you got on Wacha?
Oh, he's going to get destroyed. It's coming. It's coming, people.
It didn't tonight, though. I'm like, I'm waiting for it to happen, and he got away with it again tonight. It's just...
I mean, 26% O swing, 86.5 in the zone, 9.2% swinging strike, 10% K-minus walk, 154 BABIP, 93% strand rate, you know... It's just like, let's see what he did today. I bet he was absolutely.
Maybe he did. I thought he threw today, but I don't see his stats.
He did.
Okay, Fangraphs. Oh, there it is.
He's absolutely.
5 2/3, no more runs, only 2 Ks, though. That's better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is he's just, let's see what he did, like from a skills perspective.
Though. A 0 ERA with a 4.81 XFIP. I know it's a small sample, but just to see that gap, it's pretty wild.
Let's see what
3-4-3 FIP. Yeah, he got lucky again.
Let's see. All right, player breakdown. Michael Wacha. Yeah, he threw 60 pitches. 4 whiffs. 22% CSW. He's absolute garbage. He's going to end up getting absolutely destroyed soon. And I don't know. And I hope he does, because I dropped him everywhere because he looks so bad.
Yeah, I dropped him everywhere too. And then what will happen, Toby, is we'll pick him up for his next 2 start, and which I think was this week. So I think we might have got lucky. Yeah. But if he keeps pitching well, I know I'll get suckered back into him probably. And then it's just like the gombrine will take place.
Oh, God.
It'll happen. So we'll see. But all right, our buddy Ben Tidd, always a great listener, always giving us good questions. We appreciate it, Ben. What do you guys think about Charlie Morton for the rest of the season? Because that was a hot topic today, as Chucky is struggling. And Alex Fast was tweeting about it, that he kept getting the 2 strikes on guys, but he couldn't put them away. And they either walk him or they get hit. It's like he's having trouble finishing things off right now.
Yeah. Yeah, not pretty today. 5 whiffs, 99 pitches. I think the thing with Morton is, I mean, I think you just got to be patient with him. You know, he had the injury, so he had a little bit of a different offseason than he had.
Especially not being on the team's trainers. That was big.
We know how good he can be. And last year he did something similar where he started off pretty slowly and he ended up being absolute fire towards the end. So it doesn't mean you have to have him in your lineups, you know, moving forward, but I don't think, like, don't be dropping him in 15s or even 12s at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're underestimating like the impact that the lack of spring training has had on some guys. Mm-hmm. The lack of that usual. Yeah. So we'll see. And I'm just trying to see like what his pitch velocity, how much it's done. Yeah. So it's down a little bit, 94.8 from 94.5. So yeah. So not like crazy. Not insignificant though, 1 mile per hour. So yeah. Give him a little time, see if that he can get that up a little bit. And, you know, again, don't put him in against any tough matchups. But I think he's worth just holding and kind of seeing what happens.
As long as his arm is still healthy, which we have to assume it is, I'm not panicking just yet. Because he wasn't dominant, but the fact he was still getting ahead of guys, he's got something going. And like you said, the way he finished last year was tremendous. So I wouldn't be shocked if we get a good run out of him yet again. And that skill set he can bring is – one thing I love about Charlie is he goes deep in every game. He gets a ton of strikeouts. So it's a valuable asset as the season goes on. Dave Petroziello asks, what do you think of Reed Detmers? I think he'll be very good in time, but that likely won't be this year. I think or hope he can be kind of good this year because the Angels are very good and he can get some wins. He topped out at 95.9 his last start, but didn't get any swinging strikes on his fastball, which I saw in a tweet, but I bet Toby already knew that. So what do you got on Reed Detmers?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing great, you know, to write home about. You know, O swing is lower than league average. Z contact slightly around, right around league average, I think is the most accurate way to say it. 8.4% swinging strike, 15.5 K minus walk, you know, low BABIP 239, but low strand rate at 63.3, you know, lower walk rate is kind of nice at 2.6, you know, giving up home runs. So he looks all right, but I mean, I think the thing is, like, how many home runs has he given up? Has he given up 4? He's given up 3 home runs on 4 barrels. So I think with him, like, I think he's just like in 15 teamers, I think he's just kind of a hold and wait and see matchup type play. He's not going deep into games at all, which is really challenging. So he's, you know, barely getting to 5. But hopefully they'll stretch him out a little bit more than that. And he'll get there. So I think he's kind of a matchup dependent play in 15 teamers, but we've seen guys like this, you know, be able to take that kind of next step either with like a little bit of a bump in velo or a pitch mix change or something mechanical. So you just kind of hold on to him and see what you do, but don't put him into any dangerous matchups. I don't trust him enough.
Yeah. I don't trust him at all right now. Like, and in between the skill set kind of not flourishing, I guess is one way to say it. And the 6-man rotation, I was like, I don't have time for Detmers, at least in 12s. I got no time for him in 12. I might be overdoing it, but that's my philosophy this year. I've talked about I got to be more aggressive in my moves and to me, holding him on a roster is tough, very, very tough right now. So I'm passing on Reed Detmers for now. Our buddy, the doctor, Mike Carter, says, what do I do with Joey Votto in a 12-teamer? You sit him for now and pray he figures it out. I can't. Like, I picked him up in 12-teamers last year and people dropped him, and he was tremendous, obviously. I think he's still going to be fine, and I'll let you have the floor here in a second, but did you see him retweet the Fangraphs article?
I did, yeah.
That was beautiful. Like, that's vengeance is what that is, and maybe I'm just looking way too much into it and anything can happen, but motivating a guy that still has a pretty good skill set, I'm thinking, is not going to help. So I'm holding him as long as possible, but the underlying stats look bad. I'm not going to deny that. They look really bad, but again, I'm waiting until the end of May before I get too panicky. So where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty ugly.
It's bad. It's bad. There's no sugarcoating it with Joey Votto. Like, at least with, like, Nelson Cruz, you look at his X stats, and it's still early, but there's such a big gap. Like, some regression's coming. It just has to. Joey Votto doesn't have much hope right now, if you look at that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he is unlucky. I can't believe I only have him on one team. I mean, I think the concerns that I would have are the huge spike in ground ball rate, you know, 49% this year. He's never been anywhere close to that. The hard hit rate is down really low. He's chasing. Overall contact rate is also down considerably. And, you know, he's got three barrels, no home runs, a little bit of bad luck there. But yeah, I mean, it's just not great. There's not a lot to hold on to, but I think you're right, Bubba. I think a guy like Votto with what he's been able to do, especially in short periods of time, mm-hmm. you just got to hope he gets locked in again. Let's see.
Yeah, I can't give up on him yet. Like, there's certain guys I'm willing to kind of move on from, but I think there's still a long ways to go with Joey Votto. Especially in that ballpark, it warms up. If we ever get the bouncy ball back, like, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, it's not good looking. Everything's headed in the wrong direction. Yeah, man, poor Joey.
Yep, we'll see. But hold, Mike, hold. I know even Ryan Bloomfield said, I'm trying to figure out what to do in a 15-team league. So you hold for now. You hold. That's all. Especially in a 15, like, there's the replacement value for Joey Votto is going to be pretty rough out there, in my opinion. Like, okay, let's have fun. Say he's available, maybe more in a 12 than a 15, obviously. Would you rather roll with Rowdy Tellez or Joey Votto?
See, Rowdy, I got to look at him. I don't have him anywhere, which I know everybody's talking about him, so it probably means I've made a horrible mistake.
He's not great, but he's playing well. He's not doing great.
Is he playing every day?
Pretty much, yeah. Because Keston here kind of got the whole platoon thing kind of got. Keston's still getting love, but Rowdy's playing even versus lefties a lot.
2-19.
And I was just throwing out, like, random first basemans that are kind of middle of the pack type stuff.
Probably still want Votto.
I think I still want Votto too, but if it's one of those leagues where you're like, okay, it's so close, like, at least it's a conversation. Let's put it that way. So
yeah,
makes things a bit more interesting. Two more questions here. Taylor Johnson asks, are there any encouraging signs from Ranger Suarez, or is he more of a streamer moving forward? This is a great question because I love Ranger coming into the season, and I get it, man. It's looked rough. It's looked very rough so far. And I'm still holding out hope, but what do you see with Ranger?
Yeah, let me just see. I know he pitched today, 5 whiffs, 93 pitches, 26% CSW. Yeah, nothing good today. Let's see, Ranger Suarez. So let's see, 30.7 O swings, right at league average. Pretty significant dip in his, or increase in his Z contact. 82.9% after 75.6, or sorry, 89.2 after 84.7 last year. Swinging strike rate down 7.6%. Walking more guys. Yeah, and maybe that's it. I mean, maybe last year, you know, some of the luck was just that low walk rate with pretty mediocre to poor walk rate kind of underlying metrics. BABIP at 328, you know, so much higher, but 77.2% strand, home runs low. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I wonder if he's a velo dipper here, probably would be my guess, maybe at least a little bit. So sinker, yeah, he's down 0.5. So not a huge dip, but at that range, anything significant. Yeah, I mean, it was always the concern, right? Last year was the perfect year where everything kind of went his way. The BABIP went his way. The, you know, just the underlying metrics weren't out of this world by any stretch of the imagination, but he was able to have a great season, you know, 0.34 home runs per nine. I don't think anybody has that. So it's all probably like kind of natural regression. And if you combine, like, I would guess like when he gets to 100 innings this year, you know, ERA probably in the like low fours, WHIP in the like 1.3s, something like that. Like when you combine that with 2021, that's probably who Ranger Suarez is.
Yeah, that's my concern is I think he'll be better this year, but I think it's like we're not going to get last season either. Like I was a elite type season. It's kind of what Nestor Cortes is doing right now. So maybe prepare for some fun there with Nestor as well. But
Nestor's out of this world.
He's insane right now, but like I'm waiting for that shoe to kind of like at least slow down because he's just pitching ridiculous. But like I still like Ranger, especially in the right matchups, but it's been a rough start. I do think there's better days to come, but it's tough, and that ballpark's going to be tricky. That division's not he's the best division. There's going to be ups and downs. He was just so filthy last year. Like, we saw probably, like, the 95th percentile of Ranger Suarez last year and maybe even higher. That makes it kind of tricky. All right, last question here. It's a fun one. Steve Stoughton asks, who is the rookie of the year in the American League, and why is it Jeremy Peña?
I mean, is it really a question?
I think he's just letting us know.
Just a huge shout-out to Rob Silver for – convincing me to draft Jeremy Peña in some leagues because I was not in on him at all. And Rob was very convincing. And now I have him in, you know, one of my main events, my main event that's doing the best in third place. And then my OC as well. So
I wish I had friends like that. That'd be really cool.
I know. I mean, next year when you go to Vegas for NFBC, yeah, you won't miss out on that stuff.
Yes, I know. I'll have to take advantage. I'll have to go to late night parties, all the cool kids.
I mean, Peña is, I mean, he is hitting .215.
Yeah,
let's not forget that with a .226 BABIP though.
Yeah, there's stuff to like there for sure. And the biggest thing I think with Peña where you drafted him at, he ain't going nowhere. Like he's gonna start
eight barrels, 13.6%.
He went deep yesterday or on Monday for those listening.
Yeah, he's actually been unlucky. Yeah. I mean 14-12.
See, look at now you like him even more.
Oh Jesus, I like him.
Yep. It's pretty wild stuff there. But what else is wild is that's another episode in the books, Toby. Another fun episode. 5 weeks of Fab already down. I think it leaves us with like 21 more weeks to go. Pretty sure it's like 27 weeks, something like that.
Mm.
So we're like maybe almost kind of short of like 20% there. it's a long, that's why I keep telling people, do not panic. Like it's so long, at least get to like Memorial Day or the end of May, like before you really start getting wild with things out here. Cause like I said, I got Joey Votto in a couple 12ers last year and that was tremendous. Not saying he's going to do that this year, but there'll be players like that available that get dropped. And then all of a sudden you get him for like, I got Votto. I'd have to go back and look, but I want to say it was like 25, 26 bucks. And that was beautiful. So
yeah, this is the time people start getting a little shaky.
Panic droppy. And so it's like, if you don't want to roll the dice on a Sheldon Noisy, like we talked about, go put a couple bucks in on an elite player that's slumping, put him on your bench. See if he turns it around. If he doesn't, you drop him. It's like we talk about streaming pitchers, go stream some bench bats. Like it could be really, really fun going forward. But final thoughts, Toby, as we wrap up another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip.
Man, Lou Trevino.
Did he get the save?
He blew it.
Did he get it?
He blew it. Or wait, no, did he blow it? No, he didn't.
You know,
he came in afterwards.
You know what we didn't do, but we'll do it next week because it's already late in the show. We forgot to tell who we had to drop this week. But I got Danny Jimenez. I got Danny Jimenez in a couple
we
weeks.
We did forget to do it this week. We'll should we do it quickly or no?
Yeah, let's just do it next week. We've already kind of wrapped this all up. But yeah, Danny Jimenez, I spec added him in a couple leagues. So if somehow you fell into that, that'd be fun. But again, 12 teamers where it's like, you know what? I'm just going to churn and burn this roster spot, see what happens, see where we go. But all right, final thoughts. What you got?
I hope everybody forgives me for my little league takes. I'm not trying to be mean, but just speaking truth. And yeah, good luck, everybody. It's tough out there.
It's tough in the streets.
It's hard. It is hard.
It is, but all I know is keep grinding because I have a long ways to go. But a lot of my teams in the first few weeks was like 10th, 11th place. Now we're moving into like 4th, 5th, 6th place. Like, again, they could drop back to 10th tomorrow. But you can still move pretty quickly is what I'm saying. Like, don't give up. Long ways to go. And hopefully we can help you guys each and every week. Check out Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I am on Twitter at BDentric. This was another episode of Bubba and the Batflip, episode 123, your week 5 Fab Recap. Catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.